Tell your smart speaker to play 93.7 WEEI. Gresh and Fourier on WEEI.
Noon straight up on Tuesday. That means it's time to talk football. Yep, in 30 minutes, we'll have another pair of Red Sox-Cubs tickets to give away. But joining us now, Patriots insider from NBC Sports Boston. He's with us each and every Tuesday. Tommy Kern with Gresh and Fourier. Tommy, good afternoon.
What is up, my friends? You having a good draft week so far?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, we're heading out there, and we just heard that there could be some weather in Cleveland tonight, which could make some things pretty interesting for us in terms of shrinking the broadcast. But by God, that's not what we are here to talk about. I know there's a lot swirling around the Patriots. There's a lot of rumors, a lot of innuendo, things like that. But, Tommy, I want to start with the actual draft. Do you really think by, draft night, 2 days, 7 hours, and 58 minutes to be exact, that someone elsewhere in the National Football League will call the New England Patriots and give them a deal they can't refuse? Does that happen in the next 2 days?
I think that the deal would have to be exorbitant and unprecedented for the Patriots to consider trading down. Does that happen? I can't get into the minds of the Raiders or the Vikings or the Broncos, but I can tell you that the expectation is so highly set that I would say that the chance of it happening is remote.
So with all the hullabaloo that we've been dealing with this number three pick, really since December, I would say, I think people are really focused in on this draft, knowing that it was going to be a top five pick. I just saw your poll, let's keep it simple. Is it just going to be Drake May?
I would think that is the most likely scenario. I would say, without reservation, Christian, that the greatest by far likelihood is that they sit there at number three and take a quarterback. If it ends up being Jaden Daniels because Washington takes Drake May, I think it would be Jaden Daniels. If Drake May is there, I think it's Drake May. So, they don't have the choice between May and Daniels, it seems. They would have a choice between McCarthy and May, but my feeling is that they would lean towards May. Just based on the upside, based on everything that has been said about upside and the belief that you want to bet on the talent and your own coaching staff to bring it out. So I think that the most likely scenario is Drake May.
Tommy, if there was, I don't know, I know trades are enticing. I get that. But I know that it's the whole, hey, we're open for business. Is that just trying to play both sides of the fence? Or do you think there is an element that maybe some in Foxborough aren't 100% completely sold on taking that quarterback at number three? Is that just business is done, or an indicator that maybe they don't love the top of the draft?
Yeah, and that's a good conversation I had with Felger. Florio has brought it up, and I'd say this. I wonder what your reaction is as well, but I think that saying we're open for business will entertain offers for a trade down doesn't necessarily mean that you are not in love with the quarterbacks who are there. You're just trying to extract an opportunity to say, love these guys, but can someone make our entire roster better at other positions and we can still get a quarterback we kind of love? Maybe you love Penix less, but you get such an exorbitant amount, like a starting left tackle or high-end wide receiver, in addition to multiple first-round picks, and you say, man, really love May, but this makes us so good at so many different spots. So I think that you're not necessarily out, so to speak, or have reservations, so to speak, about any of these quarterbacks. But I do think very much that Elliott Wolf sitting there last Thursday and making the statements he did about trading down was an exercise in, hey, last call over here. Who's coming up? Anybody? Because, he is an interim. He does not have the job yet. So it would be, I think, malpractice if you're in that spot and don't play it the way an aggressive young GM should.
So we're talking to Tom Ekern, and with that, I'm assuming that you saw the Diana Rossini tweet from yesterday. And just in case people listening right now haven't, I'm just going to read it. The New England Patriots are listening and taking calls from teams looking to move into three. While Elliott Wolf is running point, I'm told Patriots president Jonathan Kraft is heavily involved in the decision making. I'm just curious your thoughts on that particular tweet at this particular time involving Jonathan Kraft and how involved he is. I'm critical of it because I'm just curious to why that tweet identifying Jonathan at this point in time.
I think it's an ongoing perception that is being fed that Jonathan Kraft continues to be looked at as the man behind the curtain who is running things. And I'd say this, from calls I made yesterday and information I got, nothing has moved up to the level of having a conversation about any trade offers. So heavily involved in what? Nothing has risen to that level. And I think it's dubious to think that, just think about the implausibility of Jonathan Kraft pushing a quarterback on his new personnel department, or Robert Kraft, and his new coaching staff, saying, you know what, we're taking May here. And then expecting that group, if they had reservations about it, to succeed or to go along. Would that be the right way to approach it? So I just think it's implausible when they've said publicly so many times, we're going to hold our football people accountable and they'll make the football decisions.
I wish I could get behind that more, Tommy, if the GM wasn't an interim guy who could just be shoved out. Because we actually saw last year new owner syndrome. And I think there's a little bit of that going on of the we get to ride the roller coaster now because Bill's gone. That David Tepper did that arguably in Carolina last year. On the whole, oh no, this is the guy I want type thing. And with new people, because I don't think Gerard Mayo's now, I mean, I'm sure he'll be heard, but are these guys going to jump on the table if the owner has a lean one way or the other? And RKK saying I'd love to get a top flight quarterback at the owner's meetings. It feels like maybe the orders aren't given, but they're sure as hell implied.
Oh, I think that they absolutely would be numb to not understand what the Crafts would like to see for their franchise and their business, the marketability of young players, a hood ornament for your franchise. But, you know, I think that the we factor for ownership should have been dulled by now after 30 years, 31 years as owners and seeing, look, we're not equipped. We are not equipped to make these picks. They're talking to the coaches, the offensive coordinators, the quarterbacks, coaches, the trainers, the families. They have more information than we do. I think David Tepper's we factor, for instance, as you mentioned, might be different at the very, very top of the draft. But I think with the Crafts, I think that they understand, hey, we can be passionate about it. We can know what we're looking at, but we are by no means experts. The best way to submarine this team, which has gone, you know, since 2018 with no playoff wins, one Pro Bowler in the last however many years, is to get out of the way and let the people do their jobs. And I think that, you know, they state it publicly, they state it privately. We're not going to force on people, but we will hold them accountable. So it's absolutely a perception and a narrative that's not going to go away. It was born in the 90s after Bill Parcells left and Pete Carroll came in, and it's embedded. So it's not going away. I just think it's somebody needs a villain, and they are fitting the bill right now.
So, Tom, do you think it's fair to say that the hay is in the barn now for this team, for this organization, as far as what they're going to do and how they're going to do it and who they want?
I would hope so, right?
Yeah, I would hope so, too.
Meeting. They haven't had their last meeting yet, according to Wolf, last Thursday. I would imagine the hay should be in the barn with every single war game scenario that you could have going into this draft to role play. What happens if Minnesota comes up? What happens if Denver comes up? What happens if, you know, the Raiders want to send us Davante Adams and picks? What do we do? So I would imagine they've gamed all those scenarios. They have the player that they want. in mind. There shouldn't be any rock kicking. There should be consensus by now. I'd love to know how aggressive they'll be in the trade market, though. You know, Ayuk out there, A.J. Brown out there. The Patriots, as I've reported and stated, are anxious and hopeful to make a trade for a wide receiver. They kick the tires on A.J. Brown, as Albert Breer said last week. He'd be the most likely guy because of the affordability of his contract. Ayuk continues to be a player that, you know, is targeted, I think, around the league, T. Higgins. I think that they would be busy during this draft to try and extract whatever position they're not able to address. And X receiver is the number one spot.
When do they start signing some of these defensive guys? After the draft? Because if you look at kind of a 2 or 3 year window, I know the offense needs addressing. You mentioned wide receiver. Looks like they're definitely going quarterback in number three. When do they start to spend a little dough to try to pick off some of these defensive guys early and not get to the end of next year where you have pretty much your whole front seven, it feels like, heading into free agency?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it would be dependent upon whether they do make a trade and how much cap space they have remaining after the draft ends. You know, going into training camp, I think, would be more likely to, Gresh. You know, that's when I think a lot of things start to get done in June and July. So that might be premature. But again, I don't know where they are. But I would imagine all focus right now is draft related and undrafted free agent related. So they're probably pretty buried with that stuff right now.
So I saw this story about Robert Kraft and his bid to be in the Hall of Fame and how it's not looking very good because he's doing too much campaigning. And I kind of chuckled because I was like, isn't every single owner and every single player in a way campaigning and politicking to be voted in? Isn't that kind of the way it works? So why would they hold it against Kraft if he's doing the same thing, if it's even true, if he's doing the same thing every other owner and every other player was doing?
I don't know why. And I don't know what goes through the Hall of Fame voters' minds in terms of timing and how many contributors go in. And to me, if you're a Hall of Famer, you're a Hall of Famer. And nothing to me is more heartbreaking than, and I'm not saying that this would be the case with Kraft, but seeing guys posthumously inducted into the Hall of Fame is one of the saddest things you can imagine. It wasn't Stabler posthumously inducted just recently. I think Pat Bowlen might have been. But it's just, you know, if you're a Hall of Famer, you're a Hall of Famer. And if Jerry Jones is in and Robert Kraft isn't, to me, that's just mind-blowing based upon them coming in at generally the same time. And I don't think that the Cowboys have done really enough since 1995 in the last 30 years to propel Jerry Jones to a plateau that Robert Kraft isn't on. But I don't know how often Kraft falls asleep worrying about the Hall of Fame anymore. I would imagine at some point he's probably gotten his head around it, that this hasn't gone the way I expected it to, and maybe just think of the unrequited love that's gone on so far. But I think we would all agree he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. How much politicking you can do at this point, you know, I don't know. I mean, I do know the Dynasty book. The book was certainly, I think, Robert Kraft embracing an idea that, hey, this is an opportunity for me to articulate the things as I saw them and the things that we did, all of us, but certainly his own version of, these are the things that we did to get this team from where it was to where it has gotten. And I'm going to take this opportunity. So if that was a vanity project to some extent, I think that served its purpose. I don't think that the Dynasty series necessarily was the same vanity project for Robert. And it certainly hasn't turned into one in the after.
If anything, it's blown up on him, for crying out loud.
This hasn't worked at all.
Pretty amazing stuff. Tommy, thanks, man. We appreciate it. We'll catch you next week to talk about a full draft class, finally.
All right. Travel safe, guys.
All right. There goes Tommy Kern of NBC Sports Boston. And the cover Are you ready for this?
Yeah, I know what you're going
to You know read. Where you know the road this I'm is, going down
this
here.
Is so isn't the timing interesting?
I mean,
it is amazing. Is it not?
Boston Magazine has rolled out, hang on, is it the 150? I put in my likes on Twitter. Boston Magazine has put out their annual list of the 150 most influential Bostonians. Guess who is on the cover of the magazine? Hold on. 15 people are on the cover of the magazine. There's Jaylen Brown.
Mm.
There's Linda Pizzuti Henry. I see Mayor Wu.
More Healy.
I see more Healy. And I see Jonathan Kraft. And as our Mike Cadlick pulled away, Jonathan Kraft was listed number 10 in the most influential Bostonians. And there's a line in here that I think is very important to read that might tie into what we have been talking about in terms of Jonathan Kraft. We'll get to that next.
Now, more Gresh and Fourier on WEEI and streaming everywhere on the Odyssey app.
2 days, 7 hours and 35 minutes from the start of the NFL draft. Fourier and I will be in Cleveland, or not in Cleveland, god dang it, in Detroit. But our eyes will turn to Cleveland because tomorrow we are supposed to be broadcasting from the host city for the NFL draft, Detroit. But if the Guardians and Red Sox get rained out today in Cleveland, it might be two short shows and then a long show on Friday. Is that the way you drew it up, brother?
There's not even the close to I mean, it would be. So the weather right now in Cleveland is horrid.
It's apparently not good. I guess we're going to fly over it at some point. I don't know. I haven't.
Why did
you
fly out anyways?
Oh, here we go.
What do you mean, here we go?
No, we're not going to.
We're sitting there twiddling our thumbs.
We'll be on the plane by the time they would call the thing. It's not like we would have the ability to go back.
Have you seen the Doppler radar? Can you give me your own weather forecast real
quickly? You know that I'm on that, and I have not looked.
Weather.com says it's going to be moderately raining between the hours of 4 and 8 p.m.
I'll get this in.
Moderately
to almost heavy.
Oh, well, you left that part out.
I'm trying to. I don't know.
He's reading on the fly.
I'm trying to do. I'm looking at the Doppler. I'm reading graphs. I can't read a graph to save my life.
Yeah, hold on. If I went
reading,
to,
I'm reading the Doppler.
Reading is fundamental. Is that where we're going here? All right, hold on.
I read it at a second grade level, so you guys have to bear with me.
By the way, I got Red Sox tickets coming up in 5 minutes.
They will get this game in, obviously, because tomorrow's game is early. Right,
it's
and then
six.
And
it's
then
really
no, earlier. Tomorrow, usually at 7, isn't it?
Well,
it's earlier.
Yeah,
Red
Cleveland
Sox home games are at 7.
Yeah, Cleveland does the 6 o'clock starts. I think it's during certain times of year. The Red Sox farted around with that at one point. Of, I don't know.
I like the 6 o'clock game personally, but that's me.
Yeah, I.
And believe me, and don't blame traffic because you'll find a way to get out there.
Oh my word!
Is there a lot of?
I just went to weather.com to pull up the I want to see the radar of Cleveland just to kind of see what we're looking at here.
Can I see? How bad is it? Zeke, pull up the Doppler radar for Cleveland.
Hold on. As of right now, and this should scare us, as of right now, Cleveland is not getting rain.
Oh, well, there you go.
Well, when I press play, oh, they're going to get smacked.
Oh, it shows like the little real time, like clouds moving in.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's going to be a rough one. It's going to be. I am after looking at the
is
radar.
Is Lou out there? Is Lou calling the game?
After looking at the radar, I am 50-50 on that game being played today.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Big, thick band of green moving through. I know this isn't your wheelhouse because I'm the one who obsesses
no,
over
No, I don't
rain.
Ever even look at
and
it.
And I don't even. And now,
play through it.
And you know what? And now I don't. I got again, my man Marty Leto came out and hooked me up. There we go. And I got that water runoff. It's not going down the bulkhead anymore. So the overwhelming majority of my problems have been handled and dealt with from the rain end. But that doesn't mean you don't obsess over it and still watch it every once in a while. And, yeah, we might have us a, yeah, It might be you and I from the lobby of the hotel room at 7 o'clock on Thursday night or on Wednesday night, just to get another hour of content on YouTube.
Have you ever heard of somebody saying that it's lucky to fly in a rainstorm? I'm just looking at Twitch right now. Not a chance.
Yeah, no, and the rain isn't going to bother us. This is more for wiping out the game. Flying over and around it, that's easy. Yeah, I know. I mean, that was a waste of a statement from Joey Tomatoes there.
So those are weddings.
Yeah, we're not freaking out over the rain because we're flying. We're freaking out because we were planning a 4-hour show tomorrow, and I think tomorrow was going to be maybe even like the simulcast with the people from Washington. I think Merrill Hodge was on the list.
Oh, yeah.
But if we're punted off at noon, there goes, you know, some of the best laid plans. So anyway, here we go. Here we go.
All right.
So the 10th most influential Bostonian, according to Boston Magazine, is Chris Curtis. No, sorry. It is Jonathan Kraft. So on the cover of the most influential Bostonians, and I know we have some Red Sox tickets to give away, but I'm going to give you a line in the write-up here that I want you to let kind of sink in a little bit. Because there's been a ton of talk about the whole, you know, Jonathan Kraft, and he's got control of the wheel and all that stuff. And they write in here, legendary Patriots coach gone. Kraft is expected to have more influence over team operations and fans' heartstrings, it says. That he could, what? With legendary Patriots coach Bill Belichick gone, Kraft is expected to have more influence over team operations and fan heartstrings than he could with Belichick around. Man, holy crap.
Who writes this?
But it's not all about football and soccer, in parentheses, it says. Kraft continues his philanthropy and community involvement, including his ongoing role as chair of Mass General's Board of Trustees. And then there's this line. Let's not forget the 25,000-seat stadium for the New England Revolution. He's closer to getting built in Everett, and that he's hosting 7 World Cup matches in 2026. Isn't it interesting that it's put in there that he's getting closer to the stadium and he's hosting?
There's
7
a transition.
World Cup
There's
games.
Like this is an obvious transition of
power. Am I winning
influence.
You over? Are
yes,
you? Are
you
coming
you
to
yes.
my side on it the is. Whole? We're at the front of the roller
don't
coaster.
Don't you think this is all choreographed? Go ahead and sell. Give the tickets away quick.
Nah,
go ahead,
give
the tickets away real quick.
It's a 2-for Tuesday. 2-for Tuesday.
That's wrong.
You do not need to be influential. How about just a Bostonian looking to go to a baseball game? You want some free ducats? Well, here you go. Caller 9 to the contest line, 617-931-0937. You'll score a pair of tickets. See the Red Sox take on the Cubs this Saturday. Caller 9, contest line, a pair for the Sox and the Cubs on Saturday, 617-931-0937. One more pair of tickets to give away. That's at 1:30. Now back to Foley.
Okay, so there's got to be some sort of coordinated effort. There's the Diana Rossini tweet from yesterday, and there's the release of this today with the mention of him being in charge of all, which is great. Listen, good. Like, eventually, like, you get to, you know, you step out of your father's shadow. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. Most, you know, kids have some sort of, you know, time in their life where they kind of take over as the patriarch of the family, however you want to call it. But it just seems so, I don't know, forced and coordinated.
Well, here's the thing. If this was no more than wielding power behind the scenes, and like you said, eventually stepping out of the shadows, then why are you not sitting up there when Gerard Mayo gets introduced at the press conference?
Well, that would have been Robert Kraft's last real move, right? Because if Gerard Mayo gets fired, guess who's going to fire him?
Oh, it would be Jonathan.
It'll be Jonathan Kraft. It'll be Jonathan, because at that point in time, I would assume that, you know, Jonathan Kraft is pretty much obviously, you know, in charge of everything. But I think for the first year, it's going to be Robert in front of everything. But we've been talking.
But why not just sit there?
That was weird to me. I don't understand why.
And then
they said that, oh, he had something to do in the other business, had an emergency come up in the other business that they had.
Remember that? Yeah,
That's why they said he wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there was an emergency. I mean, there's more than one Kraft son, you know, that can probably handle that situation.
Because if I'm not mistaken, I know Jonathan is involved in all the businesses, but, you know, he kind of is the president of the Patriots. And what bigger thing was going on in the Kraft empire than naming a new head coach for your multi-billion-dollar entity? But then again, that's just me.
So he is going to build this 25,000-seat stadium in Everett, and he is hosting 7 World Cup matches in 2026.
Yeah.
Why is there a quote here? And that he's hosting 7 World Cup matches in 2026?
Right. He's that was interesting in the write-up from what is that, Boston Magazine's top 150.
Yeah, you want to mention who number 151 is? Did you already do that?
Billy Lanny was 151.
I think the bigger
issue is who's 145, since you have the full list.
Geez. 145 would be Greg Hill.
Oh, really?
Look at this.
Oh, really?
Look at this handsome fella here. Look at this. He cleaned up nice, didn't he? Number 145.
Did Mayor Wu finish in front of him? He'll be pissed.
She's like top 10.
Oh,
maybe
really?
Number one.
Who's
actually
behind Greg? I think that's the real question.
Who finished after Greg?
Well, number 150 is basically anonymous, because Boston Magazine went with number 150 would be the future Patriots quarterback. So he literally put just a blank face and space in there and was just like, yeah, this person will be known because they're the quarterback of the Patriots, yada, yada, yada.
So it says, by the time you read this, the mystery may be solved. The NFL draft scheduled for this week is likely to bring us a QB on whom we can place our hopes for a fresh start. Or maybe we'll find ourselves cheering a veteran via free agency or trade. All we know is that this city hasn't been the same since the end of you-know-who era, and we need a reason to root for the home team again.
I like how they just put a silhouette in there.
He looks bald.
He does.
It's going to be – are there any bald quarterbacks in the draft
Do you think they
all have hair.
It's actually Caleb Williams. It's an outline of – actually, that looks like an outline of Chris Curtis.
I know it does. Megamind. It looks kind of like Megamind a little bit.
I prefer grown-up Caillou.
That's even better. I know. Somebody on the
Curtis
Twitch right
Caillou.
Now. Jacoby Brissett, number 150. Yeah, they should have put Brissett's number picture in there.
That's right. They could have put old Jacoby in there. So who are the others that finished behind Greg? How ignominious for them. Who was 149 through 146?
Let's go. Marty Walsh was 149.
Marty Walsh for Boston.
Executive Director, National Hockey League Players Association. Repping the players.
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah. He took over for Don Fear.
Andrew Gilman.
Okay.
Do you know what he does?
I don't know. I just need the names.
Steve Walsh.
Okay.
Liz Cheng.
And they were all behind Greg Hill.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Patriots quarterback behind Greg Hill.
Yeah. Well, of course. I mean, because, you know, Greg is absolutely more important than the future of the New England Patriots. You know, he has more influence. He talks more. I like the fact that the Patriots quarterback made it on the list, because any quarterback that is going to be starting, first of all, you're not going to hear from him. He's not going to say anything of any relevancy for the next 3 to 4 years.
Yeah.
He's not going to be, you know, Jaylen Brown was on that list. That was kind of interesting. You know, he deserves to be on that list. He's very vocal. He's out in the community. He's speaking out as much as possible. But 3 Patriots, no Celtics rep, no like Celtics ownership. Player ownership.
I didn't go through all 150, but I know that Jaylen Brown was on the cover.
I didn't see Wick on there.
Well, the 774. Wick's 59. Well, the 774 is saying, you guys doing the exact same thing the morning show did 2 days ago. How original. Did they know Jonathan Kraft was number 10? Were they talking about the cover? Like, I get Greg was 145, but or is the 774 just cherry picking and not listening? Because that's what it feels like even more. But, yeah, Jonathan Kraft, number 10, on a day after the report comes out that he's kind of grabbed the wheel down there at Gillette and is having big influence. I don't know. I think that ties in and advances this whole thing a little bit to the 7-7-4.
Well, all right, then.
How about that?
Thank you.
How about this? From the Adam Schefter podcast, J.J. McCarthy was on there. Says he met with Patriots owner Robert Kraft while on his visit. What do you make of that? Because I did ask you at one point, how many of these QBs get in front of Thunder? I thought all of them, quite honestly.
So he met with Robert Kraft, quote from J.J. McCarthy, the coolest, smoothest guy I've met in a long time.
Yeah, J.J. McCarthy.
Can we say this in Matthew McConaughey voice? Because that is what I hear when someone starts with, the coolest, smoothest guy I've met in a long time.
Oh, you
call
mean
me RKK. Okay.
Just being able to know that you're in good hands when the Kraft family is running that whole thing. The coolest, smoothest cat around. The smoothest cat in town, I tell you what. Yeah.
So here's the quote. The coolest, smoothest guy I've met in a long time. Just being able to know that you're in good hands when the Kraft family is running that whole thing. And obviously, Coach Mayo's been a part of that success over the years. And what he's building is a feeling that I got when I first stepped onto Michigan. A sense of urgency to rebuild the culture, rebuild this team to where they want to get to and to where they were.
All right, all right, all right.
Is it a big deal that McCarthy met with Kraft, in your opinion?
Yes.
Why?
It is. Because every trip I've ever taken, I've never met with the owner. Free agency, never met with the owner. Not once. And I don't know how many there were, but there was a lot, I guess, for the amount of time I was in the league. I just don't feel like it's relevant. Like, what does the owner, I never went to dinner with them, never saw him in the building, and they never, you know, never had some sort of orientation.
Do you think times have changed because of the media accountability with the NFL?
No, I think it's
because owners now would be asked, oh, did you meet with said player in the first round before you drafted?
And no. But again, I'm not a quarterback and I'm not like the CEO of the franchise. It's probably different, right? They were probably weren't even alert that I was coming in, so maybe that's different. Because if you are the quarterback, if you're Kirk Cousins as a free agent, mm-hmm. Dak Prescott, Tom Brady, the owner is meeting with you. If you're the of the 30 visits, if they even did have 30 visits, I don't think Kraft met with every single one of those people. But I probably can bet you that he met with the quarterbacks. He probably did meet with the quarterbacks because this is the guy that you're hiring. Think about it. If he was going to hire a vice president of operations, the owner of the company would meet with, you know, whoever was, trying to get the job. You would absolutely want to sit down with them. Even if it's for 20 minutes, you would want to at least like, hey, what does he say? What makes him tick? Does he have a wandering eye? Am I okay with him representing my organization? Does he look good in a suit?
You think,
does he speak well?
You think JJ met with JK?
Again, that's really the important question here.
Right.
And
because not so much about Robert moving forward, because like you even said, if God forbid there has to be a day of reckoning 3 or 4 years down the road, Jonathan is the one who's going to make that call.
Yeah, this is a Robert Kraft production. This point in time, this transition and everything that goes into it is a Robert Kraft production.
And then he hands it
over. But that's why you're hearing, man. Hey, listen, he's heavily involved.
Oh,
he's still involved.
God. And to think that they're going to agree, meaning Robert and Jonathan, on everything, like, isn't it crazy to think that now might be Jonathan's time, but Robert goes, well, here, I set it up for you. Oh, my God, that's going to send shivers down the spine, doesn't it? Because it seems like he wants to be the one for the credit for the build, not Robert. I mean, if they take Drake May and he ends up being good, it's going to go on the Robert Kraft resume, not the Jonathan Kraft resume, which is why some of the stuff gets out from Diana Rossini to make sure that it gets on the Jonathan Kraft resume. Am I nuts?
No.
Thank
not
you.
Not at all.
I'll tell you what's nuts. Being a big league manager in Major League Baseball and being thrown out because the guy behind you had a voice like me. That exactly happened yesterday in Major League Baseball, and we will make fun of it all on the lighter side of sports next.
Time now for The Lighter Side of Sports, brought to you by Awaken 180 Weight Loss on Gresh and Fourier.
Fourier in Cleveland, 73% chance of rain this afternoon, 58% this evening. We might have some trouble.
Or they have a good hotel bar.
Time for The Lighter Side of Sports. Sponsored by Awaken 180 Weight Loss.
Yeah, I don't even want to. I'm going to be so irritated tomorrow. If I'll be so irritated.
This trip really is like working against you guys.
It is just. It is not.
And I giggle because I can't. Oh, my God. Well, I know that the work and care that Christian Fourier has put into this, and I'm not kidding. And that's a part of the reason why I'm laughing, because I know that deep down, here's what it is.
6 months you know of how, prep on this.
You know how like when, for those who remember do people remember cartoons at all? Popeye the Sailor Man, when he would eat his spinach and he would go through all of the spinach and go through his body and he would just tear things up. That's what it feels like Fourier might do tomorrow or tonight.
He's going to turn into the Hulk.
If we find out that he's just going to, or
he's going to see red.
Or like the steam will just right out of his ear like a teapot.
No, you know the visual that I get?
Or I envision you like just like Mike Ditka on a sideline.
Nope.
Just get so red-faced that blood just squirts out of your
eye. Have you seen that one meme of the office worker who's like trying to fix his computer and then he just sits there and he doesn't move and he just loses his mind, crashes the keyboard, throws the screen out the window, just goes nuts. Like he just completely loses it and freaks out.
Yeah, that more like that. But it would be your stuff that you would be annihilating.
Yeah, that's true.
What are you going to do?
That's the penalty.
You're going to go to the business center where we're staying and be like, I'm going to beat up this Commodore 64. God damn it.
Commodore 64. Texas Instruments.
Yeah, seriously. Hey, nerd with a pocket calculator, get over here.
Where are all the guys with the number two pencils?
You grab Coop and you give him a noogie, and there you go. So how about this? Yesterday afternoon, the New York Yankees played a baseball game. And Hunter Wendelstadt was the home plate. I know,
sounds
right?
Sounds like a fake name.
It totally should does, doesn't name. It? It sounds like the name that the umpire would stay under. Like Hunter Wendelstadt sounds like the name Angel Hernandez would use at hotels to make sure that fans would know that a-hole umpire Angel Hernandez was staying at the hotel. But I digress. So we're talking first inning here. Hunter Wendelstadt is behind home plate. And there's some woofing going on. And you will hear this audio of Wendelstadt looking over to Aaron Boone and saying, if you don't shut up, I'm going to throw you out, basically. And then there was a guy sitting right up against the dugout who had on like a blue pullover who apparently was like me, Fourier, a little loud by nature, right? And this was the guy who yelled at umpire Hunter Wendelstadt, who then turned
I'm
around.
It right now.
It's on. You need to hear this, folks. Here is the way this whole thing transpired yesterday at Yankee Stadium, where I can't believe I'm saying this. We would defend Aaron Boone because he said nothing and yet got thrown out of a game.
You saw making that call.
You're not yelling at me. I did what I was supposed to do and check. I'm looking for him to get hit by the pitch. Got anything else to say? You're gone. Okay.
Oh, okay, Hunter.
What? We're not going to need a John Boy breakdown of that one. We got a very clear. There you go. And now Aaron's saying, I didn't say anything.
You're gone.
Aaron's saying, hold on a second. I didn't say a word.
No, I don't care.
Hunter Wendelstadt with some aggressive rabbit ears, one batter into this game.
What do you make of a big deal? No big deal.
No. It is a big deal because Because even what was his name? Wendelstadt?
Hunter Wendelstadt.
Okay, he went to him and said, listen, it wasn't me. It's obvious. It's basically, there's proof. He's like, I don't care.
He pointed to the guy who's literally sitting by himself right up against the dugout.
And he just didn't care. It didn't matter if he listen, on one end, I applaud him for his willingness to hold the line, even though he was clearly wrong. And even though Boone said nothing whatsoever, and this is early in the game. It was like early in the game. It was and he just said, it doesn't matter. Now you're out. So, if you're Boone and you didn't say anything, what do you do?
Ugh.
What do you do? Wasn't you.
I probably would have either gotten suspended or fined by the league because I'd have lost my mind knowing I was right. I would have kicked dirt on home plate. Like, yeah, if Aaron Boone legitimately started doing cartwheels or freaking out or whatever, he was more than right in doing so. And you want to hear what makes it worse, and this is why people hate umpires.
And
just own up to it. After the game, there's no way that Hunter Wendelstadt couldn't have gone to review or gone on Twitter and just been like, oh, my God, it was the guy behind the dugout that yelled. So listen to part of the explanation. This was from the pool reporter. What happened that led to the ejection of Boone in the first inning? Mixed in with this, okay? I know what Aaron was saying, that it was a fan above the dugout. That's fine and dandy. There were plenty of fans that were yelling at me before I called a pitch till the end of the game. What happened was, it wasn't him. It wasn't over where it was bench coach Brad Ausmus was. It wasn't where the coaching staff and Aaron were, but Aaron Boone is the manager of the New York Yankees and is responsible for everything that happens in that dugout. In my opinion, the cheap shot came towards the far end. So instead of me being aggressive and walking down to the far end and trying to figure out who might have said it, I don't want to eject the ball player. We need to keep them in the game. That's what fans pay to see. Aaron Boone runs the Yankees. He got ejected. Then he went on to say on another question, the audio clearly picks up the exchange and Boone comes out and says it was a fan. What do you make of that? And then this guy says, and I quote, like I said, he's probably right. There were hundreds of fans yelling at me from the area back there since I even called a pitch. But what the situation was about, the Yankees dugout being upset with something that happened with the first base umpire. They've been given a lot of leeway to continue to express it. When I heard enough of their expression, I gave them a final warning. It just so happened that beside the fans, there were probably, if you said you can see a fan yelling at me, he wasn't the only one, and it probably lines up with behind Boone, and maybe that's what Booney heard, was that, hey, this guy behind me was yelling. I was approaching Aaron Boone because of something that happened at the further end of the dugout, and as the manager of the Yankees, he's responsible for the dugout, not just his vicinity. That's just how I look at it.
Again,
anything else to say, you're gone.
What he went at Boone. He didn't say, like, what it.
The Major League Baseball rep.
What a dink.
As far as, like, referees, grown men and women who manage games, right, who have to police the game. Easily the most sensitive out of all of them.
Who has their ears on more? Major League Baseball umpires or the new management at Gillette Stadium? Thank you very much. Could we say it's a tie?
That's a close one. I was going to ask you, who do you think is most likely to throw somebody out of a game? Oh, actually, so because in basketball, it's usually they tee you up. They don't really. It takes a lot for NBA ref to throw a coach out or throw a player out, right?
It's two right? techs and you're ejected.
But I know. But so in this regard, I would say, who is most likely in baseball? Like who's most likely to do the throw a tech? Do you think an NBA ref is likely to throw a tee quicker than an ump is ready to throw you out?
No, it's clear. It's Angel Hernandez, and it would be an umpire because at one point in time, Angel Hernandez threw Steve Mongo McMichael out of Wrigley Field once because right before doing the take me out to the ball game for the seventh inning stretch, the fans were all whooped up at Angel Hernandez, and he was like, I'll have some speech with that umpire later in the game. And Angel Hernandez turned around like a badass, and Mongo McMichael clearly didn't care and was looking down and was like, yeah, you got a problem? And then he did the seventh inning stretch, and then they threw him out of there. So I think it's Angel Hernandez beginning and end.
Yeah, there's a video of an ump throwing a organ player out because he played three blind mice after they missed the call.
Like, seriously.
That is great.
Yeah, honest to God. You
That's
know?
My point. It's like they're so overly sensitive. God forbid you tease them at all.
Yeah.
At all. You can't tease them at all.
Well, they hear it all the time. 162 games. I understand it. But you got to be right. You're going to throw a manager out. You got to be right, for crying out loud. Well, the Celtics are going to play a game tomorrow. It's mightily important.
That won't get rained out.
No, it will not. And Joe Mazzulla talked about none of the Celtics being nominated for an individual award. You will be shocked what you are going to hear next.